Hey, this is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Welcome to this week's Just the Tip episode of the Speaking of Sex podcast. Each Wednesday, we share a provocative excerpt from one of our favorite resources about sex and relationships, and then have a short conversation about it. At the end of each episode, we offer you a tip or challenge for you to explore in your life. If you want deep, penetrating conversation, keep tuning into our Friday episodes. But for thrilling quickies, we're here bringing you Just the Tip each Wednesday. If you've been listening to the podcast, you know that we are celebrating Kinktober. All of our podcasts this month are exploring different facets of kinky sex in support of early enrollment in our new course, Kinky Sex Mastery. You definitely want to go over to pleasuremechanics.com/kink. That's pleasuremechanics.com/kink. And check out the course and our early enrollment package, which includes some amazing bonuses. And we're really excited to start that course on November 1st. So today I thought we would go back in time a little bit and look at the roots of the word sadomasochism, because sadomasochism has been confused with kink for a very long time, and it's only just now that we're starting to differentiate between kink and sadomasochism, and the difference is a huge one. So Richard von Krafft Ebing was a prominent German psychologist and forensic expert who published a book called Psychopathia Sexualis in 1886. This book was a European bestseller, went into over a dozen editions in the author's lifetime, and is now considered one of the first official texts in sexology, the medical and scientific study of sexuality. So this book, Psychopathia Sexualis, is super important in how sexual culture has evolved over time and the medical and legal categories around sexuality. A lot of that in our culture goes back to this specific book. So it's a super important one to be aware of. So Richard von Krafft Ebing, he worked in asylums, and his case studies were mostly of the criminally insane. He studied the sexual behaviors of his inmates and created categories to understand the patterns he witnessed. His interpretations of their sexual behavior became the first textbook of early sexology and created the categories of sexual deviance that are still with us today. This book was aimed at doctors and lawyers who wanted to diagnose and criminalize specific types of sexual deviance. And this is really important to understand. The book was actually not even available publicly because it was so explicit and it was a veritable catalog of sexual deviance. The book's title page declares that the sale of this book is rigidly restricted to members of the medical and legal professions. So he was writing this book to categorize and label different forms of sexual deviance so that these categories could be used in court cases, for example, or by doctors to diagnose and treat their patients. He was very much about categorization and understanding different types, because at this time in medical history, the shift was moving away from looking at behaviors to looking at identities. So instead of being a normal person who does something deviant, you become a deviant yourself. It's considered part of your identity, part of a biology flaw, part of a medical disorder, rather than something you just did morally wrong. The medical industry and the legal industry were taking over from the church this task of categorizing and punishing sexual deviance. Like most scientists of his time, Krafft Ebing considered procreation the purpose of sexual desire and thought that any form of recreational sex was a perversion of the sex drive. He said, quote, "With opportunity for the natural satisfaction of the sexual instinct, every expression of it that does not correspond with the purpose of nature, propagation, must be regarded as perverse." And Psychopathia Sexualis is basically a huge collection of case studies. You can read study after study of the criminally insane and their sexual perversions. People like Jack the Ripper appear in this book. And two of the categories that appear again and again are the sadist and the masochist. And this is what popularized the terms, even though they had already been in use amongst literary culture. Sadism came from the Marquis de Sade, who wrote about very sexually violent fantasies. And the term masochism was derived from the name of Leopold von Sacher-Masoch, who was the author of Venus in Furs, an erotic story about male submission to a woman. And so while these terms were already kind of floating around and being played with, this book, Psychopathia Sexualis, was the first that made them into an identity, into a category that someone could be diagnosed as. So all of a sudden in culture, we have the term a sadist and a masochist, which you could then be identified with, and created a whole pathology around certain kinds of behaviors. And so in the book, sadism is defined as lust aroused by cruelty, by being cruel to others, by doing harm, by hurting and humiliating other people. Masochism is understood as lust aroused by being the object of cruelty. And about these disorders, he writes, quote, "Coupled with perversions of sexual life and sexual imbecility springing from the same degenerated soil, often with the aiding influence of alcohol, the most monstrous and horrible sexual excesses, such as sadism, are perpetrated, which would disgrace humanity at large could they be committed by normal man. The commission of these atrocious acts by degenerated and partially defective individuals is the outcome of an irresistible impulse or delirium. The mechanism of these actions is indeed the property of psychical degeneration." And psychical here meaning psychological. It's kind of an older term for psychological. So he's saying that not only are these identities, they're perversions, but they're absolutely a disgrace to humanity, they're atrocious acts, and they're committed by defective individuals. And so this was the understanding put forth in this book, is that sexual perversions were related with criminally insane acts. These really out there case studies. And yet it was put forward that if you exhibited any of these signs, you were on your way to these atrocious criminal acts. That it was a slippery slope from wanting to spank your wife to wanting to murder and dismember her. And that sounds intense, but this is kind of how the book reads, is that these are disorders, and that if we see any signs of these disorders, we need to treat this person as a potentially criminally disordered, perverse individual. And so what happened is this book came out, it became a standard textbook in the legal and medical fields, and it started this whole discourse, this whole conversation about sexual perversions as medical disorders, as psychological disorders. And this idea persisted through sexual history, through sexual culture, until very, very recently. And what's happening now, finally, is we are differentiating between the terms sadism and masochism, sadomasochism, and kinky sex, because it became essential to differentiate between people who are actually enjoying hurting others and doing harm to people, and people who were consensually playing with power exchange and kinky sex and sensation play and that kind of thing. For a long time, the stigma and the shame of sadomasochism kept these subcultures underground, and they were extremely private and anonymous, and you had to find your way in. And slowly over time, and I think this is a subject for another podcast altogether, the kinky community came out of the shadows. They started organizing and creating clubs and conferences and play parties. And as more people started identifying one another as kinky people, as fellows of this sexual interest, and talking and saying, hey, we are healthy adults, we're totally socially competent, we're holding normal lives and holding down jobs, and we just happen to have these sexual interests, and that doesn't make us diseased, that's not a mental illness. As those conversations started happening, certain individuals stepped forward into public as leaders of the kinky community and started putting forth the idea that this is not a mental illness. And after over 125 years since the publication of Psychopathia Sexualis, the medical industry was still diagnosing kinky sex as a mental illness. Leaders from the kinky community started taking this to task, saying that there is a whole community of healthy individuals practicing kinky sex. And there's an organization called the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, whose whole mission is to destigmatize kinky sex and work with legal professions and police officers to make sure that we have a differentiation between abuse and domestic abuse and sexual abuse and consensual kinky sex. And the founder of the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom says this, quote, "A sexual sadist practices on non-consenting people. Someone who is kinky is having consensual, enthusiastically desired sex," end quote. And so this is the moment we're in right now, is where we're understanding the difference between kinky sex and abuse, between kinky sex and sadomasochism that's really about cruelty rather than pleasure, even if that pleasure looks like rough sex and intensity and domination and submission. We know that those roles are consented to, and it's all within the bounds of having safe words and really focusing on that this is a chosen experience that ultimately, even if it feels painful in moments, is about pleasure and celebrating the body and sexuality, versus behavior that's really about doing harm to others. These are two totally different things. And once we make this distinction and can use the language appropriately and say sadomasochism is one thing and kinky sex is another, then we are free to really explore kinky sex on our own terms and not dictated by over 150 years of a misunderstanding of kinky sexuality that's based in German insane asylums. And an interesting side note here is that after publishing this book, all these people started coming to Kraft Ebbing for private therapy because they recognized themselves in the case studies. And he would talk to these people and get their life stories. And these people were not the criminally insane. These were just regular people who had come across the book because it became this underground, pornographic, sensational book, and saw little pieces of their own desires reflected in the pages, and so came to Kraft Ebbing to talk about this. After many years of hearing these stories from people and taking case studies from regular people rather than the criminally insane, his overall attitude became more and more lenient and humanitarian. From the early 1890s, he was publicly opposed to the penalization of homosexuality and was among the first to sign a petition to decriminalize homosexuality in Germany. And yet, his book had already been written, and the legal and medical professions had already adopted it as a textbook, and so in many ways the damage was done. Until 2010, in America, when the American Psychiatric Association announced that it would be changing the diagnostic codes for BDSM, fetishism, and transvestic fetishism, which is kind of cross-dressing, in the next edition of its Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, commonly referred to as the DSM, which was published in 2013. So now in 2015, we're only at the beginning of recognizing kinky sex behaviors as part of the normal spectrum of healthy sexual expression. And of course, that's what we're all about here at Pleasure Mechanics, is expanding this idea of what is normal and healthy to include the whole range of sexual behaviors that are about pleasure and happen between consenting adults and are enthusiastically chosen because it's interesting to us, because it arouses us. We think that there's such a wide range of things we can do with our bodies and our minds to get aroused and get turned on and express love and desire for one another, and that when done well, it's healthy and good for you and good for your relationship. And in our new course, we really focus on guiding you into kinky sex in a way that's super safe and will strengthen your relationship rather than threaten it. We help you avoid all of the pitfalls so you can get excited about kinky sex and get hands-on experience in a really safe, guided way. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com/kink and check it out. That's pleasuremechanics.com/kink. And check out our new course on Kinky Sex Mastery. We will be back with you on Friday for another episode of Speaking of Sex, where we're going to share with you our beginning adventures into kinky sex, how Charlotte and I both got kinky to begin with, and how we are integrating it into our marriage. So don't miss that tell-all episode. We'll see you Friday. This is Chris from PleasureMechanics.com wishing you a lifetime of kinky pleasures. Cheers.